Welcome to ITE 1, Module 4.
Ooh, thank you, Kerry. Okay, so we've just talked about building computers now in the last chapter. Now we're going to talk about maintaining them. Also about troubleshooting. Okay, a lot of troubleshooting can be saved from being happening if you maintain your computer.
I actually knew somebody who did a unique version of troubleshooting, just very briefly. Their computer decided that it wouldn't work, so he took it out into the paddock, he rested it on a fence post, and he shot it with a shotgun. So that was his version of troubleshooting.
I like it.
Well, it worked. That sort of reminds me of a friend of mine who talked about ways of getting around things. She kept putting on weight. It's not me I'm talking about here.
I was just also going to say, I'm just going to make an interesting point here just before we get started on troubleshooting. Yeah. A lot of people, when they're using computers, take it really personally. And when the computer doesn't work, they get crankier and crankier. Yes, German computers! Okay, one, take a deep breath and calm down. Two, it's your fault, not the computer's. Now deal with it. In other words, relax. Relax. Calm down. Take a deep breath. If necessary, walk away from the computer. And come back later when you're feeling fresher and more focused, because the computer is not deliberately making your life difficult. Honestly.
Otherwise, blame your partner. Yes. Okay, you thought I was going to stop that story, didn't you, about the weight, didn't you, hey?
No, I didn't.
Just talking about shooting computers. Now, she decided this day, I was staying with her, that she was not going to be putting on weight anymore, because when the garbage was going out she walked. Garbage is out on the sidewalk making for the garbage truck to come along, and in went the scale. So weight problem was never again. It's one way around things, isn't it? Okay, so you can either shoot the computer, shoot whoever else is around at the time. No, I didn't say that. Okay, we'll edit that out of there, Kerry.
All right. No, we won't.
Oh, nasty, nasty. Okay. So, preventative maintenance is really important for you to stop problems from actually occurring. But if you are having problems, we need to learn how to troubleshoot. It's something that you learn over time. You learn what type of troubleshooting to do for a particular problem that you might be having. Okay, so we use preventative maintenance to sort of reduce the probability that we're going to have problems.
Quick story. Has anybody ever been in the situation with somebody who will never, ever, ever take their car in for regular servicing? And in fact, you do not take the car in for regular servicing because that's completely a waste of time, and then you've got to get a lift to work and it's all too tedious. And then the day that something really, 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 really important is happening, your car breaks down and will not leave the driveway, and you call the RAC or whatever, because let's face it, you don't know how to fix cars yourself. It takes them hours and hours and hours to get the car fixed, and then you're really cranky and you go and you curse at everybody for the rest of the day going, it took me 5 hours because my car crashed and I couldn't get it to go. Well, it's the same with computer maintenance. If you do proactive troubleshooting and preventative maintenance, your computer will break down less often, and of course that preventative maintenance will also involve taking backups, which I'm sure Geraldine will talk about.
Oh, I'm sure I can do that. Okay, so when thinking about things you might have to do preventative maintenance on, what would you be looking at first? Thinking about preventative maintenance.
Defect?
Probably before that you might be looking at the really simple things. Looking at things like your cables, are they still in good condition? That type of thing. is the, you know, the fan outlets, are they dirty? Just things, really, really simple things, so that things aren't getting overheated.
Yeah, how much dust is inside?
Yeah.
And in fact, you might want to check the cables, because we had the aforementioned student, Mr. Hammer, we'll call him from now on, he actually went to check and try and figure out why his network wasn't working, and he actually found out that his sister's pet rabbit had chewed through the Cat 5 cables. So, yeah, it does pay to check your cables from time to time, especially if you've got a pet rabbit.
Someone just asked what was the pet rabbit's name, Sparky. If he wasn't before, he is now.
it would have been if he'd chewed through the power cable.
Oh, really? Oh, dear. he got a charge out of life, eh?
What? Go home, Geraldine.
Sorry.
Gosh, I wish that stupid cat would have.
Can we get back to the current program?
Who was that? That was Jenny. You failed, Jenny. Okay, the other thing you have to look at, is apart from hardware problems, is looking at the software problems. So you might want to make sure things like you've got current versions, you know, things like making sure that the versions of software you got are compatible. Also making sure you got the correct drivers, isn't that right, Kerry?
Yes, Geraldine, who needs to get the new Intel drivers.
So other things you can do, you know, is really just being proactive, looking at things that you can do to make sure that you don't have breakdowns along the way. Don't download any suspicious sort of files, things that are going to cause problems for your computer.
This is an interesting point actually, and we were discussing this on the weekend. I don't know why this is, but people who know nothing about computers are completely open to spyware, malware, viruses, and having their computer trashed. In fact, my sister is posting her laptop across to Perth so that I can fix it, because her partner was looking up celebrity wildlife pictures and managed to get their computer infected with all sorts of things going onto sites that he possibly shouldn't have. Got to watch those wildlife sites. And unfortunately, it means being a little bit sensible with your computer. If you log onto a website that says, do you wish to install and run the following ActiveX control, you probably want to make sure that A, you know what the control is, B, that it's signed by a reputable publisher, and C, that that site should actually be installing or running that particular control. A lot of computer users are what I call rabbits. In other words, they see the OK button or the Yes button or the Just Go For It Mate button and they go, oh, yes, yes, yes! Oh, no.
It is true. Yes, good idea to read things first to make sure what you're doing is what you should be doing. Okay. Really, with your troubleshooting approach, sort of being organised, sort of thinking, okay, what am I going to do? How often am I going to do it? You might want to set yourself up like a maintenance program that you can follow, so that you've got a regular, like Kerry was saying, regular servicings on cars, regular servicing on your computer. Okay. Basically, when you're troubleshooting, there's a few steps. Now, this is going to come up in the exams. I know it sounds very simple, but the steps to remember are, if you're working with a customer, you're gathering data is the first one. Second point is verifying the obvious issues first. Three is looking for quick solutions. Four is gathering data from the computer. Five is then evaluation of the problem, and then thinking about and implementing a solution. And I would add another one there that's actually not in your notes, and that's documenting the solution. And the next one is closing with your customer. Okay, so
and then raising an invoice.
What you did. Yeah, that's. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
waiting for that. That's what I said last year.
Yeah. So
it's an important
sure
step too.
Yeah. And as I said, what's not in the notes there is actually documenting your solution. It probably will be further down, but you might have the same problem occur. That solution might have taken you 3 days to work out. If you don't document it, the next time it happens, you think, oh, what did I do last time? I can't remember. So always make sure that you document what you did so that you can remember it.
And in fact, if anybody's ever read my blog, it's rather boring. It's basically how clever is Kerry, as far as what I've fixed and whatever else and what I've built. But often back in my blog, yes, you can laugh all you like, Ms. Lonsdale, but at least mine isn't about blowing things up. I'm talking about...
Yeah, mine's too.
Yeah.
No, so, we're talking about me.
No, that's right. So yes, it's the blog is all about what I fixed, how I fixed it, what went wrong with it, and my general rants and raves on computer hardware and all those sorts of things, and generally what's been going on. And the blog is actually a reference so that if I go, yes, I've seen this before, I can look back in my blog and find the entry where I wrote about the particular problem if I genuinely can't remember what the problem was. Obviously, that's not the most professional way of doing it. You have help desk systems and stuff to track this stuff if you're actually doing it in a job, but for my own home computer work, that actually works fairly well. It does.
Now, the other thing you need to do before you do anything, before you touch anything, what do you need to do, guys?
Have a coffee.
Backup data.
Ah, that's the one. Thank you. Yes, make sure you back it all up. Nothing worse than you start doing something, all your data's gone, and oh my goodness. Oh.
That's assuming you can back it up, actually, and sometimes you can't.
But if you can, you don't want to...
So that's where you should be doing regular backup.
That's
exactly.
Yes, well done, that's right. And that's part of your preventative maintenance plan, is backing up your data on a regular basis. Where might you back it up to, folks?
External drive?
Yep, this one. Any other places you can back up to?
A CD.
Secondary hard drive, CD, yep.
Yep, that's correct. Okay.
Tape drives, yeah.
Yep.
Now, the other thing I'd... Network share, that's a good one too. And some people do it on thumb drives. But this is going to be... is this where we cover backup in this one, or is there actually another module where we cover backup?
I think we do more later, yeah. But this is just really about troubleshooting. Yeah.
I'll save my how not to use an external drive rant for the one where we actually talk about backup.
No, I think you should add it in.
Okay. Well, external drives. I have a problem with people who go and buy a 1 terabyte external drive because they were cheap at Officeworks or Fry's or whatever your favourite computer store was, and they go, oh, ripper! I'll just copy all of my music and all of my pictures and all of my stuff onto the external drive as a backup. And then they delete it all off the primary hard drive. And they go, oh, I've got it all backed up on the external drive. No, you don't. You have it all copied to the external drive. It's not backed up, it's copied. And then, of course, in about, 3 to 6 months, your external drive falls off the desk a couple of times because you're not as careful as you'd like to be. And it starts making what I call marble in paint tin noise, which is... and it stops reading. And all of a sudden, your pictures and music are not coming up off that external drive anymore. And you go, but I didn't think external drives could fail. Well, hello. In fact, about 30 to 40% of external drives fail within 6 to 12 months of purchase. And don't think that thumb drives are any more reliable because they've got no moving parts. They go gooey too. One power surge, and I'm out of here. I mean...
And they're easy to lose.
Yeah, you lose that thumb drive with all the important stuff on it. So, understand that backup is a duplicate copy of your data, not just shoveling all of that Aerosmith off onto your external drive because your internal hard drive is going, you are out of disk space.
No, I think that's a very valid point. Thank you, Kerry. Okay, so yes, being... thinking ahead, thinking of what might go wrong, and trying to anticipate is a really good move. Okay, when you're talking to clients, customers, whatever you want to call them, very important to talk nicely to them. But also you want to elicit the answers that you need. So you're going to need to ask them direct questions so that you can gather your information. The other thing that a lot of people do and shouldn't do is use jargon. Everyone knows what I mean by jargon. Talking.
I think what's actually happening to your computer is that you're multiplexing the 32-bit bus over the data lines, and what's actually happening is we're seeing a rising edge clock signal causing interference with the... Well, you've lost them. So,
yes.
but at the same point, and I mean, I don't think you should avoid jargon. I think you should minimize jargon because you cannot...
Minimize it.
Yeah, you cannot escape jargon in the computer world because there are terms that you do need to use. So don't save the users completely from the terms that they need to know. No, the big box sitting on the desk is not the hard drive. Be nice to them and try and explain the terms that you're using where possible and minimize the amount of jargon you're using, but educate them because you don't want them going, I think I've got a problem with my thingamajig that plugs into the whatchamacallit. They do need to know the names of things and they do need to know the jargon. And I think that's important, but do minimise it. Don't sort of go into complete techie speak. For anybody who's seen it, the first episode of The IT Crowd has a really good example of that. And if you haven't seen The IT Crowd, I highly recommend it. It's a very funny British comedy series.
And the other thing is, too, all industries use jargon. It's just a matter of minimising it, you know. Like the medical field has jargon, the business field has jargon. We all have jargon for our particular industry. Just trying to minimise it. And if you need to use jargon, make sure you explain it so that they do understand what you're talking about, bringing it down to the level that the person knows. Obviously, if you've got a really techie customer, then you can talk techie to them. Okay. The other thing is be very polite. Don't insult them. And the other thing that happens is, what did you do? Why did you do that to your computer? That's not going to win you customers.
Okay, so the other thing you've got to watch out for, and this is something that I've certainly experienced doing troubleshooting courses, at troubleshooting exercises and stuff, one of the things what you've actually got to keep in mind is that as soon as you walk in that door and start fixing the computer, it is your fault. Everything is your fault. World hunger, the broken computer, the fact that this person was late for work, and the fact that the coffee was crummy, it's all your fault. So the first thing you've got to do is diffuse the customer as much as possible. It's a bit like being a bomb disposal expert. Calm them down and work through the problem with them as calmly and as patiently as possible. It's not until you get back to your office with the doors shut that you start sticking pins in the doll of them in frustration. You do have to be calm, relaxed, patient, and understanding when you are dealing with the customer. And that is very important. Professional at all times.
And sometimes it's not easy. But, yeah, remember they're your customer, okay? Now, there's some ways of eliciting information in a manner that's going to assist you. You can use different ways of gathering that data. You can ask direct questions where you're just saying, did this happen? And they're giving you an answer. Or you can use another method, which is where you're using open-ended questions.
Okay, here's an example. So, what appears to be the problem with your computer? It's wrecked. Yeah. So, what's wrong? It's broken. So, what happened when you turned it on this morning? Crashed. I mean, obviously that's not giving you a lot of information on what the problem is.
That's right.
And they're sort of closed-ended questions. So if you go up to somebody and say, can you please explain to me what is the problem with your computer? And hopefully they don't come back with, it's wrecked.
Yeah. So when you're giving the customer a chance to explain all the details of the problem, we're talking about open-ended question. This is in your exam, by the way. You do get a definition of that somewhere, I seem to recall. And the other way is closed questions, where you're usually going to get a yes-no answer.
Has, okay. Has anybody ever had the support call with the storyteller, where you ring them up and you can turn the little page in your book, and it takes about 20 minutes for them to tell you what's wrong with the computer, but around that you find out what's going on with the kids, the garden, the house, the PC.
What they had for breakfast.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay.
I was just going to very quickly say that whilst you should avoid the storytellers, don't cut them off completely, because people need validation. You need to explain to them that you are feeling their pain. Try and keep it to a minimum, however, because you don't have all the time in the world. But these people need to be validated and understood. Otherwise, it'll calm them down a lot. And that's part of the calming down, is to listen to their little rant and tirade and then go ahead and fix their problem.
Yeah, and a lot of people, too, you know, you might be the only person they talk to. So you just happen to cop it, don't you? Okay, so the second step, after you've sort of asked your open-ended and your closed questions, just verify and validate what they're saying. Okay, so you're going to talk to them, you're going to verify the obvious issues, and then you would start with the simple type things that you might have elucidated, and then you're going, how's that for a big word for the elucidated? Yes, okay.
That's her big word quota for the day.
Yeah, that's it. So you've highlighted what the issues are. Look at the simple things first before you move on to what might be much more complex. So verifying the obvious issues, and then you continue on with this troubleshooting process. So, okay, you've asked your questions, you've verified what are the obvious issues. Now you're going to gather more data from your customer.
A very quick point there. Make sure you listen to what the user is saying. Sometimes they'll have answered some questions that you were going to ask. And in fact, I've noticed with a lot of ISP call support, they've got this script that they go through, and they keep asking you questions that you've already answered. And I actually got to the point one day when I was on the phone with this guy, and he kept saying, "So have you tried unplugging the phone line?" "Yes, that'll be time number 3 that I told you that." And it wasn't sort of until I sort of said, "Look, I am a CCNA instructor. Can we cut to the chase here?" that he sort of went, "Oh, okay." It's as if they don't listen to what you're saying. They're just like, "Oh, well, the user's just talking crud." Yeah, exactly. So it's very important to listen to the user and listen to what the user is actually saying. Yes, Elise.
And it gets worse. And I don't just mean robot mode with the people. Like, you got a robot human being, but I rang up a large telco in this country on behalf of my auntie last year, and as people from last year will remember, I did a big project with getting somebody who was computer literate on the internet, etc. And we were having connectivity problems, which worked out to be, to cut to the chase, at their end. But of course, we actually got a recorded voice trying to assist us, and if we'd pressed 1 on our DTMF phone, we would have got one type of modem that these big, large telco give you, and if it pressed 2, we've got the troubleshooting steps for the second type of modem this big, large telco gives you, and then maybe if we'd pressed 3, we would have got the other answer. And it was all the typical stuff that Kerry just mentioned. Unplug, have you plugged it in? And I'm thinking, this is not going to help, because we tried all that. And I know my auntie and uncle wired it all up correctly, because they'd been through it about 10 times with me over the phone, and I was convinced that the problem wasn't at their end. And that sort of really made me feel really, really bad about the whole thing, because I knew I wasn't going to get the advice I wanted quickly unless I begged and pleaded with a human being, and to get through to that human being was virtually impossible in this instance. So we weren't happy.
I was going to say,
it's very frustrating sometimes when you're trying to talk to a human being. In a lot of instances, isn't it?
Does anybody else hate those systems where you ring them up and it goes, "Just tell me what you want."
Yeah.
"Thank you. I didn't quite get that."
Quite get that, yes.
Yeah,
and you just said it for the third time.
Yeah. Actually, and in fact, I think you probably get some of these, Grace. We don't actually get them much over here, but I think over in the States you actually get automated telemarketer calls where you like press 1 and 2 and 0 and stuff to say how many kids you've got and stuff.
Yeah, I get them like at least once a day. Hi, this is so-and-so senator whoever, and I want you to do this or that. I just hang up. But what I was going to say is the worst thing about those just tell me what you want to say is when you're trying to read an account number with JAWS and say it back to them and they get the JAWS mixed up with you and you can never, ever, ever get it to work right.
Which is why I wear headphones for that exact reason, to keep that isolated from the... I'm a bit of an anti-speakers person, as people will say. I hate people with jaws that belts out the speaker and rattles all the windows, and I'm just sort of a headphones person myself, but obviously it can sort of bleed through, and often you get people going, have you got a Dalek in the background? And you go, yep, I've got a Dalek in the background. Exterminate. Here it is. So,
Grace is
not good when you get your jaws.
There are people living in our English-speaking countries who are migrants who have got quite different accents, and they fall over with those.
They certainly do.
Yeah, I had someone, every time I call somewhere, just about, you know, in the United States, all of these things are put to different countries, and I'll be on JAWS looking up something, but what is that? And then I have to answer all these really crazy questions about how a blind person uses a computer, and some of them are just really off. Like, do I have some person standing there all the time and reading it to me really fast and all that? I mean, these people are stupid.
Oh, I wish.
Oh, yeah, I hire someone just like you for that purpose.
Well, we actually had the community nurse over once, and there was my friend that usually comes and helps me do a bit of computer work, and the community nurse turns up and said, is he your carer? And this guy turned to her and said, nah, I'm putting this motherboard into this case for him because it's quicker, and then I'm going home. And this person's jaw dropped, and she sort of went, oh, right, I see. Anyway, back to lecture. We've digressed way off.
Still, it was interesting, eh? Okay, so... I don't know where we were, but anyway, yes, I do. No. The next step in the troubleshoot process is to look for a quick solution. Okay, so you've talked to your customer, you've highlighted all the problems that there are. Now we're going to look at just finding a quick solution first and see if you can fix the problem. That might be the fact that they've got a cable unplugged. It might be the fact that they've got no keyboard connected. Whatever it is, you're looking for the quick solutions first. But you're going to look at the something layer first, folks. What are we going to look at first for those who've done CCNA?
The eighth layer.
No, the physical layer.
Let's get physical. Physical. Yeah, physical layer first. Just because that can be your most simple quick fix, okay? Just making sure that there's nothing unplugged or that type of thing.
Does anybody remember when we had pre-Windows XP where you didn't actually get notifications in the system tray as to whether a cable was connected or not? Okay. Well, obviously with Windows 2000 and Windows 98, you didn't actually get the balloons to tell you whether a cable was connected or not. And in fact, a lot of network cards, the only way you could tell whether the cable was connected or not was by looking at the lights on the back of it.
If I'm not mistaken, Terry, I think I do remember it there in Windows 2000, but that's when I first saw it.
No, it's not in Windows 2000, and feel free to boot a virtual machine and prove me wrong. But it's you do not get a notification in the taskbar with Windows 2000. It was new in XP. You got the two checkboxes that say show me when I've got limited or no connectivity and show an icon in the task tray. Some network card drivers had a little application that would pop up, but it wasn't native to the operating system.
Okay, now you've tried all of those troubleshooting processes, but the computer's not fixed. Alright, so the next thing you're going to have to look at is gathering data from the computer itself. So you're looking for problems that can be highlighted to you via the computer. And one of the ways you can do that is using the event viewer, and it should give you information about what problem happened, what the date and time was when it happened, If it's a really bad problem, you'll sort of find that out there too. The source of the problem, and you'll get an event ID number. Also, it'll tell you who was actually logged in when the problem occurred. So you can't hide. The event viewer? Someone here just asked what that was. The event viewer.
And that is under right-click on my computer and go manage, and then it'll be under your administrative tools under there. So Shift F10 on my computer and go G for manage. No, that's fine. I'm telling the other people on lecture, not just you. And in fact, a lot of people have never been, don't even realise that Windows 2000 and XP and Vista have an event viewer, and people have never been in there to look. There's all sorts of nifty messages that get logged there that you might be completely unaware of.
Okay. Other things you can do is have a look in the device manager. Anyone know how to get to the device manager?
Yes, Grace.
Yes, Grace.
Well, in XP, you can go to Control Panel and then System and go over to that Hardware tab and press the... I used to be so good at doing that. You can press the Device Manager button.
Yep. And there is another way. Does anybody know the power user way of getting to it? And in fact, administrative tools, we just said it's in the administrative controls in the control panel, but administrative tools doesn't always show up, especially under Windows XP. There are two other ways that you can go. Right-click on my computer and go properties. There's another way. You can press Windows pause break, and that will take you into the system dialog. Bang, straight like that, Windows pause break. And then you can go across to the tab that way. The other way you can do it is start run and key in dev, devmgmt, .msc, and I'll key that into chat. And that's the other way to get in.
Okay, so those quick ones.
There we go. Windows pause break brings up the system dialog, which is the key to all the way to the right on the group of three up the top of the keyboard. It brings up the system dialog. Yep, and then you can go control tab, tab, spacebar to get into the device manager.
Okay, so they're good tips to have on there. The other thing that you'll find when you get into the device manager, there's little icons that appear, and I know that's not much help to us, but you will get this.
Who said Windows pause break isn't working?
Don't know, somebody.
Right. Do you know which one is pause break? Pause break is the right-hand one in the group of three on your group
top of the
on
keyboard.
The top of the keyboard. If you've got a desktop, and if you hold down Windows and then press the pause break key, it should pop up. It's hold down Windows and press pause break, not just press Windows and then press pause break. Yeah, it does work. In fact, I've just pushed it here, and it went tick, tick, system properties, and it came up like a mad thing, so you'll have to figure out why that's not working for you. It's just your computer. Your computer's broken.
Actually, this highlights an interesting thing for troubleshooting.
Okay, yeah. So as I mentioned, and you will get this in your exam too, the type of error that shows up there is flagged with a yellow circle with an exclamation point. It will ask you about what the colours are, and it'll ask you also what shows up. This is in your exam. So also it'll have, if a device is disabled, it will have a red circle with an X. So go to your notes and just put those into your brain, because I know you're not going to see them so much unless you've got a little bit of vision. But you will get that new exam.
Also, NVDA will read those icons, just so that you know, and I think WindowEyes will too. It'll tell you that a device isn't working properly. Sorry, Alex?
We've just got a question here, folks. Yeah, that's what it says in the notes, yeah. So, whatever the notes say is what you have to... Okay. Okay. Now, here's a question for you, folks. You've just booted up the computer, okay? What's the first thing you're going to be listening for to make sure that things are all hunky-dory?
Sif, when...
Single beep, that's right. That's going to tell you that it's gone through post and everything's hunky-dory. If you are getting a series of beeps, you might have a problem, okay?
Interestingly enough, that is true on desktops, but most laptops and stuff don't beep anymore, interestingly enough.
No, they don't, yeah. Okay, if you want to get some information about the BIOS, you might like to look into the BIOS settings. Anyone know how you would do that? Okay. Now, there's a key that you have to press. Generally, there's a common key that you press, but it can vary from computer to computer.
Generally speaking...
booting up, yeah.
Yeah, generally speaking, the key on older machines is Dell. In fact, older versions of the Phoenix and AMI and Ward BIOSes, you're looking at the Dell key. However, if you have an Intel revision of the BIOS or you have modern IBM gear, you could also be looking at F2. But then again, if you've got a Xenix 386 SX20, the way of getting into the BIOS is Control-Alt-Insert. So do check your manuals.
You were talking about Phoenix. Was that because of Phoenix, Arizona, 1949?
No, it wasn't. No. But there actually is a manufacturer of BIOSes called Phoenix, but that's all right.
And they weren't in Phoenix, Arizona, 1949.
Nope. I don't believe so, no, sadly.
How long have I got till 3 o'clock?
F1 is for bypassing an error message if it comes up. One of the funniest error messages I remember seeing is keyboard error, press F1 to continue. Funnily enough, there are times when pressing F1 on the keyboard does allow it to continue, so go figure. But there is actually a setting in most modern CMOSes to disable that halt on errors. You can tell it which errors it's going to halt on and which ones it's not going to halt on. But yeah, so F1 can sometimes get you through an error, but also F1 can sometimes get you into the BIOS. So it just depends on your machine. Don't make assumptions, because you know what Assume did? He made an ass of you and me.
F1 and F2 also can take us in the BIOS settings, no?
Yes.
Depending on what system you've got. Some you press F2, some you press Dell, some you press F9, some you press F10. There is no way to know without reading the screen or reading your manual or unless somebody tells you.
It's depend on your motherboard or your operating system?
No, this depends on the BIOS, which is in control before the operating system even gets started. This has nothing to do with the operating system.
And also, it all happens very quickly, so you actually have to be hitting that, if it's, say, for example, a Dell key or if it's an F2, you've got to be hitting it fairly quickly after you boot up.
And sometimes you need to hit it before the screen has come on, if you've got an old CRT or whatever. So don't wait for the screen display, because it might be too late. It might be already booting the operating system. I've seen that a fair bit as well.
Okay, so you've done your troubleshooting. You've looked for all the obvious solutions. You've listened out for abnormal beeps. You've tried quick solutions. You've found out what it is. You've implemented a quick solution. You've repaired it. You've fixed it all up. Now you've got to close with your customer, okay? The other thing is, at this stage, you'd be verifying what the problem is. Relating to your customer, okay, I've described the problem that you'd had, and I've done this, 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 and this to fix it. And the thing you'll have to do then, apart from giving them the invoice for the job, is actually document your solution so that you next time you have the same problem, you're going to know what it is quickly. So you've gone through all those troubleshooting steps and you're now closing with the customer. Allow them time to ask you questions, okay? Don't just run out the door without them fully understanding what you've actually done for them and how you fixed it. Okay, so would you believe we're at the end of this module? I've got another quick quiz for you. I know it's a sort of very light module, but it's a very important one when you, if you have those steps in your brain, you can sort of go in there logically and solve their problems, hopefully. So we talked about today preventative maintenance, looking for hardware and software problems. Backing up was the next step. Troubleshooting, repairing what it is, looking for quick solutions, and then documenting and closing with the customer. Okay. Any questions before I ask you questions? Okay. All right.
Sorry, did we
somebody
have something?
Are there any alternatives for a JAWS user to recognize the problems in Device Manager? I mean the colors and all these things.
Nah. Go install NVDA and use it instead. JAWS will not identify those icons.
It's at NVDA, I'll try and say that again, NVDAproject.org. Is that correct?
That is correct, and NVDA 0.6 patch level 3 is out, and once it's installed you can launch it by pressing Ctrl-Alt-N, and it is...
And it is free.
It is completely free, yes, and it's very cool, and you can run it off thumb drives if you've got the thumb drive copy. It does not require administrator access to run, it does not use a video intercept, therefore it can run even when your video drive is a cactus. Yeah, it's not a bad bit of gear. It works with Firefox, it works with OpenOffice, it works with Word, it works with the desktop, it works with my computer. It does not, however, have an off-screen model, therefore you cannot see stuff that is written that bypasses the Windows APIs with certain software. It does have a JAWS cursory sort of mode, but it does use the object model of Windows, so there are things that you cannot see with NVDA, but they're not common. Yes, Suman?
Yeah,
you're very welcome.
While using NVDA with Internet Explorer, I'm facing a bit problem with combo boxes. I mean, I am only the person who is facing this problem, or it is like that?
Depends on which version.
Thunder is okay, but it's, yeah, I find NVDA better.
I always thought Thunder's a bit sluggish and crusty and horrible from what
I was... Yeah, I did too. Very slow. NVDA is much better.
Now, the official answer to your question, Suman, is... With NVDA and Internet Explorer, go run Firefox 3 or 3.05 or better. That's the official NVDA answer. They don't care about interactivity with Internet Explorer because Internet Explorer didn't give them $100,000 like Netscape did. So go and run Firefox 3.05 or greater, and you'll find that your combo boxes will probably behave themselves. If that's not an option for you, then you can certainly file a bug report on the NVDA pages. And this is an interesting case in point, and this is a mention to everybody. If you do have a problem with a piece of software, say for example, especially some open source stuff like NVDA, try submitting an issue to the issue tracker rather than just going, I think it's broken, why won't they fix it? Maybe they don't know. But I do know for a fact that they have less access to Internet Explorer 7 internals, 6 and 7 internals, than they do in Firefox. So try it in Firefox. You'll probably have a better time of it. Firefox 3.05 or later. While we're talking about free screen readers, the other one to look at is System Access to Go, www.satogo.com. It will not work in Firefox. You do need to do it in Internet Explorer, and it's a free screen reader that is available wherever you have an internet connection. So there's one for you to have a look at some point. No, it's...
I've just typed it into chat.
I think you actually had a typo in yours.
Oh, did I? Oh, okay. Sorry. Unusual. All right, I have some questions for you now, just on today's module. This one wants three answers, so what I'm going to do is yes, no, please. Can we have yes, no answers here? Which three common tasks are performed during preventative maintenance? Okay, so would you A, check and secure loose cables, Y or N? Well, yes, no. We got one answer. Yeah. Excellent. Good.
Come on, guys. It's quiz time. We want answers from all students. Imbibe some coffee or something. Yeah. It's time to participate. 2, 4, 6, 8. All of you participate.
Let's participate. Okay, yes, you would check and secure any loose cables. Would you update the RAM? That's exactly right, you wouldn't. Would you clean the mouse and the keyboard? And yes, you would. No, but this is preventative maintenance, okay? So it wouldn't depend on problem. You should be cleaning your mouse and keyboard regularly, okay? Would you update your drivers?
Okay, the notes probably say you should, and that's the answer you've got to put if it comes up in the test, but my genuine opinion on this is if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Mm.
And in fact, I've had computers tear themselves to pieces, especially when I've updated drivers off Windows Update. So don't get drivers off Windows Update unless you know they work, because they can hose your computer quite nastily.
Mm. Okay, would you reinstall the operating system? I like that one.
I actually know people who do that as their weekly troubleshooting.
Oh, okay.
Their computer,
that's my preventative maintenance about once a year, but...
Yeah, basically what happens is a lot of people think that Windows is incredibly unstable and unreliable and stuff, and so they get into this case of denial where it all must be Windows's fault, and it can't possibly be their crummy, cheap Taiwanese computer that they bought for, you know, $200. So they basically get themselves into this delusional state where they reinstall the operating system every couple of weeks or couple of months because it all seems to fix itself again until it shakes itself to pieces again, and they go, oh, no, that's just the operating system, when in fact it's bad RAM, bad system board, dodgy power supply, anything else, but they're certainly in this land of denial, and they're swimming with the crocodiles. Yes, Grace?
Well, you know what? I mean, I'm just curious. Isn't it kind of a good thing to do it, like, once a year or so, just to start clean again?
It's not a bad thing to do, and if you've got the skills to be able to do it, it's certainly worth doing, provided you've got all your data backed up and all that sort of thing.
You wouldn't call it preventative maintenance, sir.
No, it's not preventative maintenance. We're just talking about whether, you know, reinstalling your operating system once a year is a good idea or not. It can be, and it can certainly get rid of crud out of the registry, but you've also got to have the skills to be able to do that. I think if you're reinstalling the operating system more regularly, then you've got to look at what's actually causing the problems with the operating system, whether it is actually an operating system or whether it's a hardware problem or something that's causing the files to be corrupted. Because if you've got bad RAM, bad system board or whatever, you'll find that files will corrupt themselves slowly, and you'll get what we call bit rot, where things sort of scramble themselves to the point of no return. And that's obviously a problem that should be fixed. Reinstalling the operating system is like taking a Panadol. It can get rid of the headache, but if the headache is caused by a different underlying problem, you want to treat the cause, not the symptoms.
Okay. All right, next question. In which two situations is it recommended to ask the customer to sign a liability release form before you're attempting any kind of repair? Okay, so we want two. A, the technician needs to share the responsibility with the customer. B, the information on the computer is critical. C, the technician is unable to back up the customer information. D, the information in the backup is confidential. Or E, the customer is unable to provide a backup.
I'd take more than two of those.
I would too.
I'd take all five, really.
Yeah, that would be really playing it safe.
That would be. But the critical ones are, C, the technician is unable to back up the customer information, and E, the customer is unable to provide a backup. Okay, question three. What is the first step in the troubleshooting process? Is it A, gather data from the computer? B, gather the data from the customer? C, verify the obvious issues. D, evaluate the problem and implement the solution. E, hang on guys, close with the customer. Or F, try quick solutions. Okay, so those that said B, you are correct. You're gathering the data first. Okay, that's your first step. Okay, next question. Which type of question allows the customer to completely describe the problem? Is it A, closed-ended question, B, open-ended question, C, specific, or D, technical?
Now, just a point, guys. You're all answering early, and you think you're all really clever. What you're doing is you're giving everybody else the answer. So can we wait until all the options have been read before answering, please? Because you're just giving the other students the answer, and it's not cool. Right.
I agree, yeah. That's okay. Yeah, B was correct. It's an open-ended question. It allows them to expand on just a yes-no answer. It's not just a yes-no answer. It gives them the opportunity to explain.
And just for people who want to answer the question early, and you can answer the question early, but just don't press the return key. Just put your answer in and wait, and then that way if you end up being wrong, you can wipe it out and change it. So put the B in. If you hear the answer you want, press the B in, but don't be the enter rabbit. Just wait until the answers have been finished read and then press the enter.
Okay, now we want to have the last step in the troubleshooting process. So what is the last step in the troubleshooting process? A, gathering data from the computer. B, gathering data from the customer. C, evaluating the problem and implementing the solution. D, closing with the customer. Or E, trying quick solutions. Now you can go.
Hey, that's better.
Yeah, that was better. And yes, you're correct. It's closing with the customer. That's D. Okay, I know, Elise. Sending the invoice is the next one. Oh, so that's actually... that's actually part
but
of
it probably is true.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of today's session. You get an early mark today. Is there any questions before we go that you'd like to ask?
How's everybody finding the courses so far? I noticed everybody was getting a bit shaky as far as discovery is concerned, because we're getting into the hard stuff now, and you might find the same is true with ITE. How is everybody dealing with the courses so far? Because not to get you all panicky, but it's only going to get harder from here on in.
I'm really liking it.
So far so good.
Oh, that's good.
Now, the other thing
is, student, it actually gets really interesting from this point forward.
Just a point, guys. There's a couple of you, and I'm not going to name and shame, but for anybody who's listening to these lectures behind time, I'm still missing some labs from a certain subgroup of students. We want those tests at least 2 weeks. Within 2 weeks of a module being completed, or we want an explanation why.
Yeah, because otherwise you'll get behind for starters, and there are lots of labs and lots of worksheets. And the other thing, you'll have a very unhappy instructors because we get about 500 million labs all arriving at the end of the semester, and that doesn't make us very happy when we've got to mark them all.
Yes, Suman.
Yes, Suman.
Though the curriculum is a bit tougher, the way you instructors are dealing with the classes are amazing, sir. Thank you so much.
Oh, you'll get some extra marks in your next lab sheet submission. No, just kidding. We are not open to bribery, much.
I like chocolates.
I like lint. No, seriously. Thank you for that. We always wondered whether the lectures were actually useful. because we weren't sure whether they demystified things or just overly mystified things. We are really sorry that we can't cover everything you'd like to know in a lecture, because we are on a limited time. And I mean, we could have like a 6-hour lecture per day and we still wouldn't cover everything. So we do apologize for that, but as long as you find the lecture somewhat enlightening and maybe even have a little bit of fun, that's also good. So we're happy that some of you enjoy our lectures.
We do have a little bit of fun as we go along, so we hope you like that.
Yes, Grace.
Okay, this is probably not important to anyone but me, except some people are probably listening to the lectures later. If you're in the United States after today, lectures are going to be at 6 because of daylight savings time.
We will be changing shortly too, times, because of daylight saving is ending. Someone else was just chatting then too.
That was Suman.
Oh, Suman, can you repeat what you said, please?
Earlier, when we joined the class, we thought that waking up early in the morning, 5 o'clock, is a bit tough time. But later on, after listening to the classes, it's worth waking up in the mornings. We're really having fun.
Oh, well, that's good. Minding our warped sense of humours.
Actually, and one of the things, it'd be interesting to speak to the academies you guys are with and feed that back to them. We did actually have a complaint from one of the academies saying that we were running the lectures far too early and it was a completely silly time to run those lectures. But obviously we also had some feedback from a whole pile of students, and we've never had so many students on early in the morning before. So do let your academies know that this is a good or a bad time to run the lectures and stuff, because it's only by your feedback that we can decide when to run the lectures and stuff. We realise that getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning is incredibly early. We do hope that you, as you have indicated, that you are finding that useful. And we hope that obviously that getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning for you guys is worthwhile. It's really difficult with the time zone differences. What you will be happy to know though, or you may be unhappy to know, is when we switch out of daylight savings, which should happen in a week or two, it will actually be 6 o'clock in the morning, so it'll be an hour later. So that might be good or bad depending on how your morning routine works. We will notify you when that change is going to take place.
And we really appreciate your feedback, and also
we'll get to that in a second. Sorry, yeah. You were just saying, Geraldine?
Okay, no, I was just saying that... What was I saying? No, I was just saying how nice it is to have all the people from India on this year, because we really didn't have many of you on last year, and it makes a huge difference when we've got an audience out there, and especially people who are participating like you are. So we do appreciate that, and that's, we really appreciate all your efforts, and also for people in other time zones like America. Grace, you know, we really love having you on as well. So,
And actually, can you... I might actually get you to chase up... Grace, see if you can chase up the other American student, you know who it is, and see whether she's coming on to lectures or whether she's listening to them or not. I have trouble tracking it down given the time zone difference, so that'd be good to know. Also... Now, somebody's asked about what are we supposed to do about opening the case? What are we supposed to do if we don't have hardware? Yeah. Sorry, can't help you. Listen to the...
It's on the website.
You can listen to us, take it apart and put it back together. But we are a non-profit organisation, so we can't buy you old computers to pull apart. We can't buy you old hardware to pull apart. We would expect you to be working on a phone help desk rather than an actual bench technician job. And if your academy has old computers you can pull apart, well and good. If they don't,
yep.
Tough. Sorry. We really...
You might be able to go to a business locally and see if they've got anything old too, you know, an old computer computer shop or something, that you might be able to access one there. Schools are another place.
We can... you sure there's not somebody locally that can help you with that first, like somebody at your academy or something, because it's going to be easier to troubleshoot locally. If there's not, we can look at it remotely. And does it work in Skype? So the question is, does your microphone work in Skype?
That's a what type of question, folks?
Yeah, does it work in Skype?
That's a yes, no answer. What type of question? Thank you.
Alrighty.
It's working in Skype.
Okay, so what you have to make sure, and does it work in sound recorder? Okay, so you've certainly...
You please cross-check with your... setup in Ventrilo, whether microphone channel has been selected in the recording option.
Yes, that's right. Make sure the microphone is checked in the recording options. And also, if you have checked Ventrilo, make sure that Ventrilo is using the correct sound cards, especially if you're using a USB audio device or similar. Make sure that the Ventrilo is set to use the correct sound devices. Are we talking Windows XP or Vista? That's fine. Make sure that you also use the test with test button in Ventrilo, and make sure, and that's how you can test it without being on the server. So also make sure you test with that as well. Yeah, see if you can actually run Ventrilo and Ventrilo and Skype at the same time. So maybe you guys can get on and drop into the Enable India channel or something and test that out later and work together on that. We're really pushing for local. If we will help you if there's no other way, but obviously it's very difficult to go through things. So if you've got somebody locally who can give you a hand, and I'm not sure how many dialects and languages you guys speak, but perhaps somebody who speaks the language you speak also will help, rather than having to listen to us English, you know, kangaroo sort of people over down here and down under.
I think first language is English, is that correct? First language is English?
That's fine. That is actually documented up on the website, and it's in the Ventrilo instruction, the ventrilo.htm. It actually documents how to change the hotkey. Basically, what you have to do is you have to move your JAWS cursor down. You tab into the hotkey field. You move your JAWS cursor until it sits on the OK button. You then press the hotkey that you want, and you then click the OK button with the mouse. I would recommend not having shift key set as the hotkey. What I would recommend you doing is, what I do, is I set uncheck use direct input to detect hotkey. I then set the hotkey to be the grave accent, which is the key to the left of the one key on an English keyboard, and then I click the OK button, because the grave accent key is not a key that's pressed very often. If you use the shift key to open up your Ventrilo, if you're typing into a Word document and you type a capital letter, you'll open your microphone.
The other one you can use is a right control, because you don't tend to use that a lot either.
Yes, Grace.
Yes, Grace.
So I've tried to set my... grave accent as my hotkey before. What is the difference between using the direct input to detect the hotkey and not?
If you use direct input to detect the hotkey, you cannot discard the hotkey. So when you hold down grave accent, JAWS will go, which is a bit of a pain. So you want to use the uncheck use direct input, and then check the discard hotkey so that JAWS doesn't see it. And then once you've done that once, you actually need to close and reopen Ventrilo for JAWS to see the change.
Yeah, it was being really annoying when I did it, and I didn't know what I was supposed to do about it, so I just went back to the right control.
Yeah, well, so uncheck use direct input, and then check discard hotkey so that JAWS doesn't see it, and then that way it won't make the aforementioned noise.
Awesome.
Okay. Next week we're going to be talking about, I'll be with you in a second, is about the operating systems. So we're going to be talking all about describing them, purpose, limitations, all that sort of thing, navigating the GUI interface. So should be a good one. And also going more on to preventative maintenance. Yes, Suman.
Yeah, ma'am. While setting up my hotkey in Ventrilo, after giving my hotkey, after entering my hotkey in the setup window, then if I press tab, it is not moving to...
No.
No, it'll just get set tab then.
Okay, listen carefully, and this is really important. go into your JAWS cursor and move the JAWS cursor on to the OK button. Once the JAWS cursor is hovering over the OK button, therefore your mouse is hovering over the OK button, press the hotkey you wish to use, then left-click the mouse, which I believe is numpad slash? Yeah, I think it's...
Numpad slash.
Now, if you're on a laptop, that'll either be FN slash or FN zero, depending on the way the numeric keypad is laid out. And it's very important that you click the mouse, or click the left button of the mouse if your touchpad is enabled or your mouse is enabled, when the JAWS cursor is hovered over the OK button. You cannot tab from the hotkey field, because tab is a valid hotkey.
It'll select it. That's right.
It'll set the hotkey to tab. So do not, you cannot tab yourself to happiness, people. And there are more keys on the keyboard than tab, 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 enter. So you cannot tab through the hotkey field. You do need to click that OK button. You can't half tell that that's a little bugbear of mine, these tabbing blind people, can you?
Yes. We tabulate that. Okay, do we have any other questions? Okie dokie. Well, thank you all for being with us today. Kerry will be back. Oh, yes, a little announcement. I will not be here next week, so Kerry will be taking lectures. I'm off to Adelaide for a week. We will have a wonderful
slack.
Thank you. No, I'm going to work, so I'm not going to be slack. But yeah, I'll be away next week, so Kerry will be taking Module 5. You're very welcome. Oh, we're coming back at about 12:30, I would think, so if anyone's got any questions, we'll be around. And we will be available on Skype. We'll pop back on Ventrilo if anyone's there at 12:30. Okay?
Cheerio, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Have a good week.
Have a good week, Geraldine. See you soon. And you too, Kelly.
See you later, guys.